K2 Romeo India Whiskey here, and along with Mel, K2 Kilo Echo Yankee. Mel and Dick gather the clan and try to answer people's questions about ham radio. Ham radio operators, the main thing they're good at, in theory, is communicating. And what better way to communicate than to communicate with each other about how all this stuff works. I attended the Ham Radio University today at Briarcliff College, the 11th annual, and a good gathering of people. A lot took place. You'll be hearing more about that. A person signs into the technical net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like this, KE2EJ, Eric, and yes. So we have any check-ins tonight. Please give me your call letters and name and that yes at this time. K2RIW listening.
M2EO, Rich, and yes.
W2, Tango, 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 no, and no fear.
Hello, Charlie 2, Tango, Delta Lima, no traffic.
WS2N, Paul, with a space report. Good evening, Dick.
Good evening, all. This is K2KEY.
Okay, so far I've got Rich, Gordon, TDL, Paul, and Mel. And so far the only yes, if I'm not being corrected, is Rich, N2EO. Anyone else with a question or a comment, please give me your call letters or name, call letters and name at this time. K2RIW.
Call sign correction. This is John. Call is Kilo Charlie 2 Tango Delta Lima.
Okay, John, Tango Delta Lima. I'm not quite sure. Do I have a yes or a no from you as to whether or not you have a question or a comment tonight? Back to you, John.
Negative on traffic. I'm just here to listen.
Very fine, John. Anyone else with a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name at this time. Noisy signal. I didn't get any call letters out of that. Want to try again? Okay. One last call. Anyone to check into the TechNet with a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name right now.
Maybe to TMD. Name is Vinny, no traffic.
Okay, Vinny with a no. Looks like the only real Rich yes we got so far, Rich, is N2EO. Rich, take your time. You may be the only check-in tonight. N2EO, what's going on in Whitestone? And is Jingle treating you correctly? K2RIW.
Yeah, okay, Dick. Good evening. It's all night tonight, I guess. N2EO, Whitestone, Queens. Dick, a couple comments in the net. First off, I saw a commercial that wanted to bring up on CNN last night, run by DirecTV, a satellite company. It seems in this recession they ran a commercial that they're hiring people. So I thought I would bring it up on the TechNet because their job is a perfect job for a ham who's out of work. They have jobs. They have job openings as installers for DirecTV. They also have jobs as dispatchers, dispatch installation and service trucks, and they've got job openings for people to work in their plants doing stocking and moving stock of DirecTV boxes and things like that. I'd like to believe maybe the president's economic stimulus package is beginning to take hold, but I think what it really is, a lot of people are out of work, and when people are out of work, they're home watching TV. I know that my father told me years ago, during the 1930s and 40s, Hollywood had its best years because people were going to the movies. So I wanted to bring that up, Dick. I saw the commercial last night on DirecTV. They said apply online at DirecTV.com. DirecTV.com. Back to that at 2
p.m. Oh, interesting, Rich. DIRECT Tango Victor.com. And hopefully they got jobs for an awful lot of people that are out of work. Sounds kind of good. You've seen that ad only on one occasion, Rich? And any indication from anybody you know as to whether or not we're looking for an extremely small number of positions or a large number of positions? Are they looking for positions in each area of the country where DirecTV is being received? What's your guess along those lines, Rich? N2EO? K2 Alpha. But before I turn it back to Rich, Bill, WB2QGZ, sent me an email, which I did not receive, and I've been looking for it. So, Bill, if you're within the sound of my voice, please tell me that website that you want me to go to, which has got the information we're going to be needing. So, I did not receive that email, and I've looked in both the automatic discarded file as well as the regular file, so I'm a little bit unhappy about that. Now, Rich, once again, what's your guess as to the number of positions and the number of areas in the country? Any indications along those lines that you think they've been fulfilled, or you think they need a whole lot of people? Your impression on that one. N2EO, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Well, I only saw the commercial once last night, so apparently they just started running it last night. 8:00 at night, around this time on CNN, and they said they've got many, many positions due to, how they put it, they said due to the fact that their business is doing very well, they've got many, many openings around the country, Dick.
My goodness, that sounds good. Okay, so once again, you're an out-of-work person who really likes electronics and RF electronics and satellite and microwave electronics, KU-band installations, installing dishes, and I presume on roofs and the sides of buildings and backyards and whatever. I had one of those dishes installed on a tree in my backyard, literally screwed into the side of a tree, and it worked for quite a few years that way until the tree decided to reject the screws, so to speak. And that's also partial my error, because I didn't use long enough screws, didn't check on it enough, and the tree eventually rejected the dish, which was mounted 3 feet above ground level, and the dish fell those 3 feet. DirecTV, DIRECT, TangoVictor.com. Apparently, according to Rich, in that advertisement that he saw, that's the place to file your request for occupation in each area of the country. Sounds awfully good. Do we have any additional check-ins at this time, or words from Bill, WB2QGZ, if he's within the sound of my voice? If we have additional check-ins, please give me your call letters and name. My name is Dick, K2RIW.
MD.
Okay, I heard a double that time. N2 Mike Bravo as good old Barry, and I did hear QGZ first. Bill, WB2QGZ, why don't you tell me that website? Partially what's going on is that Mel last week, K2KEY, had a session, sort of, on the subject of balance. One of the well-kept secrets in the electronics world is, what does a balun, B-A-L-U-N, what does it do? Why does it do it? Why do we need it? And so on. And there's an additional kind of granella, I think it is, balun, that Bill would like us to discuss. He found a website, and if Bill will indicate to us the website address, we can all go to that address at the same time, anybody who's in front of a computer. This is Bill's idea, and it's a darn good idea. We can look at the actual schematic diagram of a granella balun, one of the more elaborate and reasonably well-used kinds, which was advocated by, all of a sudden I'm having trouble thinking of a guy's name, but Bill's going to bring that to our attention. Therefore, we can all look at the schematic at the same time and discuss what it does, how it does it, why it does it so well, and so on. So, Bill first. WB2QGZ, go right ahead, Bill. K2RIW.
Okay, good evening, thanks. Yep, I shot the email out again just in case, and Jerry Sevek actually had the series on the Guanella and the Ruthross. Now, this page, the reason I figured we might just shoot the link out is instead of trying to describe it or draw a picture of it, which might get a little complicated, this if you have the access to the web, you can just look at the pictures and, I guess, follow along. So the website, which has a 1-to-1, a 4-to-1 Guanella and a couple of Ruthroffs at the bottom, is bytemark.com/products/TLTtheory, one word, .htm. And we'll do that one more time. It's www.bytemark.com/products, P-R-O-D-U-C-T-S, /tango-lima-tom-theory, one word, .htm. And that's for transmission line theory.
Okay. Now, transmission line theory could be Tango Lima theory, but you pronounce it as Tango Lima Tango theory. Are there two T's in a row between TLT and theory there, Bill? Go ahead.
Yes, there is. Actually, it's probably transmission line transformer theory. So again, it's www.bytemark.com/product/TLTtheory.htm.
Okay, I'm going to start dialing that one into my computer. If anyone else needs a fill, we'll give you that information. While we're waiting for that to take place, Barry into Mike Bravo into Moon Bounce. That's what MB really stands for. Barry's a Moon Bouncer from way back. Barry, you signed in, and give us some words as to what you would like to discuss, if anything, or take your own sweet time just tell us what's going on in your world while we all dial in that particular website. N2 Moon Bounce, but take it. K2RIW.
Okay, real good. Yeah, I don't want to tie up the whole net. I just want to, I have some old paperwork that I had developed several years, about a couple of years ago, and it's getting a little vague in my mind, and this is right up your alley, so I thought you might want to help me out with it, but we could, like, discuss it at the end of the net so we don't tie up everybody. It's just basically, it's a two-element 75-meter beam. Both elements are driven, and I'm supposed to put, I think, a quarter of a wave of line between one of the elements and the feed point, you know, with the splitter, where I go off with this coax, so I would have equal lengths of coax to both dipoles, except I would put a quarter of a wavelength more coax into one. And does that make it a director? I assume that it does. And is it a quarter of a wave that I want to put there of coax? And I'm assuming these things should be approximately a quarter of a wave apart. And I know all of that can be changed. So it's kind of my question. And if it's going to take up a lot of time, we'll save it for the end of the net. N2MB Rockaway.
Okay. Now, getting back to the previous subject, before I say what Barry just told us, that website, bytemark.com/products/tango-lima-tango-theory.htm. I just went there, and I see a beautiful picture of transmission line transformers. The first, it says transmission line transformers theory, and it shows you pictures of a Guanella 1-to-1, a Guanella 4-to-1, a Ruthroff 1-to-4, a UNUN Ballon, and looks like we got some beautiful pictures there. That's going to be nice to discuss. Now, getting back to what Barry just asked us, dialing in that particular website, looking at the picture, and wish I had made a hard copy of it, which I'm planning to be doing very soon. The two-element antenna, which is what I think you're discussing, Barry, because I was dialing in a website at the same time. I didn't hear every one of your words. I heard them, but didn't get a chance to mentally record them all, so to speak. Is this a multi-element antenna where all the elements are fed and there's a phasing line between the two? That's what I think you're discussing, but I'm not sure. So run it by one more time, Barry. N2 Moonbound, K2RIW.
Okay. Pretty much, yeah. In other words, what I'm going to do here is, what I think I'm going to do, I don't know, we're going to change it as we go along, but I just want to have, I'm going to have two elements, two dipoles. They're going to be, I guess, about a quarter of a wave apart. I know that that's another whole story, how far apart I'm going to make them. I think that's very nebulous. I could make them in a lot of places and without having much degradation. I'm primarily looking for front-to-back ratio. So if I had these things about a quarter of a wave apart and I ran equal lengths of coax to each one, it would be bidirectional, of course. Now, if I take one of the lines and make it a quarter of a wave longer going to that particular dipole, would that make that dipole the director? And is a quarter of a wave approximately what I want to do? K2RW N2MB, and the day.
Okay, now I see it, and I think I got the concept. I got good news for you. What you're describing is something very similar to the so-called WHJK, Yagi, WHJK antenna. I think it's called the Lazy H. He did it by putting a crisscross of transmission line between the two elements. So let me go slowly and describe what's happening here. If Barry did set up a pair of half-wave dipoles, and just for instance, it doesn't have to be this way, but he could, if he decided to, make both dipoles horizontal or both dipoles vertical. Put one dipole a quarter wavelength spaced away from the other. Each dipole is electronically exactly a half wavelength long. So that electronically at first, neither one looks like a director or reflector because it was made longer or shorter. They are really equal length dipoles, and if they were in space all by themselves, they would be electrically one-half wavelength long. For instance, on 80 meters, it would be something like 131 feet long of, let's say, 14-gauge household wire. Because the two dipoles will see each other a little bit, some adjustment of impedance is going to have to be required. I'm not going to go there immediately. Let me drop. But because the two dipoles are physically in space a quarter wavelength apart, and if Barry is smart enough to feed them a quarter wavelength differently electronically, he can do that in a number of ways. But one way or another, he makes sure that the signal he excites one dipole with is a quarter wavelength ahead of the other, or conversely, you can look at it as one dipole is a quarter wavelength behind the other. Whether you make one dipole fed from a power divider with a shorter line or a longer line, that's your choice. But you're going to make 90 degrees of phase difference between the two. There's one extremely universal characteristic rule of thumb that's used by all the really good antenna engineers, is that a phased array antenna, whether it be a collinear phased array, an end-fire phased array, it doesn't matter. Any phased array antenna fires in the direction of the delay. Opposite of common sense. Everybody would think that you would fire in the direction of lead. It fires in the direction of delay. There's a bunch of reasons why Mother Nature behaves in that manner. So let me picture two dipoles horizontally polarized, both of them going from east to west. One of the dipoles is more north than the other, and they're parallel to the ground in my diagram. Let me drop. And assume that Barry is smart enough to make the dipole to the north the one that is fed with a 90 degree electronically, with velocity factor included, fed 90 degrees later in phase than the one to the south. So his northern dipole is being fed late by a longer length of line. His southern dipole is being fed directly, you could say, early. That antenna will fire to the north. In theory, that antenna has a front-to-back ratio of a very large number of decibels. Let me show you why. draws the signal to the south, gets there first. That signal emits in both directions. The signal is going in a donut pattern all directions of space, up and down and north and south. But now let's just talk about the north-south signal. A signal hitting that southern dipole, a portion of that signal propagates to the north. By the time the signal gets to the northern dipole from free space, the radiation from the southern dipole is reaching the northern dipole in free space at the exact same instant of time that the longer length of cable that Barry used to the northern dipole, that dipole is also being fed in phase at that time. Those two signals arriving at the northern dipole are in phase with each other. The free space signal that got emitted by the southern dipole and the signal that's arriving by the transmission line, both of those signals are in phase. They enhance each other, and the signal keeps propagating to the north, and everything's hunky-dory. You've got a beautiful signal to the north. Now let me prove to you that's going to have a signal that is out of phase to the south. If I look at the fact that the northern dipole is being fed a later signal, let me drop, and I decide to analyze the whole situation free space-wise in the other direction. I decided to reference my analysis from the northern dipole. Once again, these two dipoles are being strung east to west. One of them is north of the other by a quarter wavelength in free space. That's how far they're spaced apart. I decided to watch what happens to that signal traveling down Barry's main transmission line. It hits his power divider. It goes through the longer length of cable, and that signal hits the northern dipole. And I naively assume that at first nothing but the northern dipole is transmitting a signal. And some of that signal from the northern dipole spreads to the south. The signal that gets to the south took a quarter wavelength in time to get there because of the speed of light, and Barry was smart enough to put a quarter wavelength of spacing between the two, roughly 65 feet. By the time the signal emitted by the northern dipole gets to the southern dipole, because the southern dipole had already been fed a signal that was leading in phase by comparison to the northern dipole by 90 degrees, but the signal took from the northern dipole to the southern dipole an additional delay. Let me go the other way around. I'm looking at the signal coming out of the power divider. It's got a quarter wavelength of delay because of a longer length of line going to the northern dipole. The signal emitted by the northern dipole has another quarter wavelength of delay by the time it spreads through free space to get to the southern dipole. The bottom line is the free space wave going from the northern dipole to the southern dipole is 180 degrees out of phase with the signal that is arriving at the southern dipole by way of the transmission line. So once again, signal emitted from northern dipole is already late because it was fed with a longer length of line. It's got another delay when it gets emitted from the northern dipole toward the southern dipole, a total of 180 degrees of a combined delay in feeding and delay in free space. So the signal spreading from the northern dipole to the southern dipole arrives out of phase by 180 degrees with the signal coming up that transmission line, the shorter transmission line to the southern dipole. They cancel. So when you put the whole picture together, you've got two signals going to the north enhancing each other. You've got two signals toward the south, so to speak, that are canceling each other. In theory, you've got an extremely good front-to-back ratio. There are a number of different spacings and a number of different line lengths, let me drop, that will give you this forward-to-reverse directivity that Barry is looking for. But quarter wavelength of spatial and quarter wavelength of cable will do it beautifully, and I think you see how that should give you about as much delay as you'd like, as much front-to-back ratio as you want. Now, feeding it with a power divider and two separate transmission lines is one way of doing it. The WHJK, the John Krause antenna, does it by having a crisscrossed open wire line, so to speak, between those two dipoles, and he feeds, he feeds the southern dipole. In that crisscross technique, he's feeding the southern dipole Let me think now. Delay. Yes. He feeds the one to the south. It will fire to the north. Again, antennas fire in the direction of delay in the way you feed them. So more than one way of feeding it, more than one way of setting it up. I think you've got a good approach. And because dipoles, as long as you've got enough trees and towers and things on the property like Barry does, as long as you've got enough hardware that can suspend a pair of dipoles in space, call it a wire beam if you like, with some kind of relatively simple feeding mechanism. It could be just one transmission line going up to the southern dipole. The northern one is fed by a crisscrossed twin lead, so to speak, open wire line, and that antenna in this example will fire to the north. And although he can't rotate that beam, if he's got a desired direction he wants to favor and 180 degrees away from that in azimuth, a direction he wants to unfavor, that antenna should work like a charm, Barry. N2 moon bounce for any other fill or questions on this. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, first of all, let me say to the whole net, that explanation was so good that without even taking out a piece of paper, I could see how to manipulate that very, very easily. If I change the spacing between the dipoles, I know from your explanation, I know exactly how much to shorten or lengthen that delay line going to the other dipole. I mean, the whole thing just makes perfect sense. It just happens. So that was a good explanation. And I might also want to add to that the explanations I have found in all the antenna handbooks, I can only come to one conclusion. If somebody understands something, they can explain it very quickly. These guys are not explaining it quickly, and they're explaining it in very confusing language, and I'm starting to think they don't fully understand it. Dick, I really believe you understand it, for many, many reasons. First of all, your past history with antennas should tell us that you might well understand it. But anyhow, to make a long story short, one of the reasons why I want to do this with coax and a simple T-connector or something in the shack is because now reversing the antenna is simply a matter of doing some manipulation right here in the shack, you know, just moving the delay line over to the other side. And also, there's no hardware hanging out there in the weather. Everything's in the shack. All the balans and, you know, all that stuff is in the shack. Now, as far as putting balans on each individual antenna, I've been told, because, you know, we're going from balanced to unbalanced. You know, the antenna is balanced. The coax is unbalanced. So if I put a balun there, that's going to affect the delay to each one of the antennas. So it's going to make things a little more confusing. I might, in your opinion, do you think I would be better off if I just used a choke, you know, with ferrite beads at each antenna? Because that's not going to give me this big delay problem. And it should work. What do you think of that, and do you think that's silly?
Okay, every one of us has to wait the full 3 or 4 seconds until you hear a beep. Otherwise, we might be timing out the connection between the 8-5 machine and the 3-7-5 machine. And if we time out that link, then people who want to sign in through the Internet get locked out. So we have to make sure we wait for that beep. And I know some of us get excited, and we sometimes jump the gun a little bit. Item number one. Item number two. Barry, I know that you flip back and forth between sideband operation and FM operation. In sideband operation, your particular rig, you have to turn up the audio a little bit louder. Now that you're on FM modulation, you've got to turn the audio back a little bit. The audio is a little bit heavy. Didn't distort, didn't drop out of the machine, but it sounds a little bit heavy, so do back off on the audio a little bit, the audio gain control in that particular transmitter. Number three, let me drop. As you can see, we got a full 3 or so second timer there that we got to wait for. The most desirable spacing, in my opinion, that'll give you the greatest front-to-back ratio is quarter-wave spacing in free space between the dipoles and a quarter wavelength with velocity factor considerations of the extra length of cable to that northern dipole in my example. And because the dipoles do see each other, a dipole in free space high enough above the ground would be very close to 72 ohms resistance with very little reactance left over. But you've got two dipoles fairly close to each other, feeding signals back and forth. Therefore, the impedance is going to be disturbed. Therefore, if you wanted really low standing wave ratio, some other form of adjustment of impedance might be required. Not a showstopper, just know that the impedance shouldn't be readjusted. There are ways of computer modeling it to find out exactly what you should do. Now, when it comes to the balance, oh, by the way, a quarter wavelength of spacing and quarter wavelength of extra delay is, in my opinion, going to give you the greatest front-to-back ratio. You could use longer and shorter spacing than quarter wave, readjust the phasing of the signals accordingly to get the full cancellation of the back lobe with other spacings is a little bit more difficult. I'm going to have to think about that one. So in general, right now, until we can get a little bit smarter, go for the quarter, if you know what I mean. When it comes to the balancing, to make sure you don't have any extra signals flowing down the outside of the coax cable, if that's what you're feeding them with. And by the way, if you fed them with open wire line, no balance are required. And if you had an open wire line to the northern dipole and the southern dipole, and you got the right kind of network down at the ground, bringing those open wire lines into the shack, maybe just a simple half-wave coax balance on each transmission line, and in the shack you've got a power divider and an extra quarter wavelength of cable that by way of relays or switches or whatever, you flip it back and forth so that either the northern antenna is delayed or the southern antenna is delayed, and yes, you can reverse your direction electronically, and you can do it in milliseconds if you're doing it with electromechanical relays, and you can do it in microseconds if you're doing it with step recovery, field effect transistors and things like that. So electronically, electromechanically, very rapidly you can switch from favoring the north or favoring the south by switching the signal. You're really using phased array techniques to the max when you do that. Let me drop. So feeding both antennas with open wire line for the major length of the transmission line, no hardware up in the sky, all the fancy hardware is down the ground or in the shack. If you decide to feed the antennas with coax cable, yes, putting a balun on each one of them, the right kind of a balun rated at your power level, at your frequency, would do the job. W2AD and whatever, there's a bunch of brands of balun that should do the job. If you decide not to use the balun, by the way, the fact that you're using a balun at each antenna does create an extra delay, but because each individual antenna has its own balun, that becomes a wash. It's only the relative phase of how you feed the two antennas that determines which way the signal fires. You could, if you wanted to, make a poor man's balun. A poor man's balun would be some number of turns of coax of a reasonable diameter taped together in the near vicinity of each dipole. You could feed each dipole with coax cable with a simple coiled coax cable, and that coil of coax cable acts like an RF choke, so that the RF energy that wants to flow down the outside of the transmission line, the outside of the coax cable, comes up to the choke, sees the scraping inductance, no significant amount of current flows beyond that point, and the whole action stops. And so that's a more distributed, larger physical object type balun if you did it with coil of coax, as opposed to the white chunk of tubing that's about a foot long, or maybe three quarters of a foot long, and probably 2 or 3 inches in diameter, with the nice great big hooks on the a pair of eyes at the top where the dipole actually gets attached to. That's a nice physical arrangement. Costs you a little bit more money. Might do a slightly better job. Got to be a little bit careful about buying a balun that's rated for your frequency. By definition, the balun's... Let me drop. The balun's must get larger as you go to a lower frequency. And make sure you buy one that's big enough that can take the 1,000 watts of power you might be feeding into it. In your case, because you're doing a power divide, if you were running 1,000 watts of power, only 500 watts of power would go to each individual dipole. And I think we're allowed to run 1,500 watts peak envelope power. And I think balancing devices are average power limited more than peak power limited, is my belief. In other words, it's a heating effect that we're worried about. You don't want to overheat the balun. And you can overheat a balun by using it at too low a frequency, too high a power, feeding an antenna with too high a standing wave ratio. Each one of those three items puts greater stress on the balun if you didn't buy one that's big enough. Going down in frequency makes it more tough. Going higher in VisWatt makes it more tough. Going higher in power makes it more tough. So once you solve all those rules, no real problem. The nice thing about the coiled coax balun is that it can tolerate as much power as your transmission line can tolerate, and it's not super vis-wire sensitive and so on. So you pay your money, you take your choice. I think that's most of what I wanted to say. How soon are you going to be building one of these, Barry? How soon are you going to be telling us how well it works and what kind of DX you worked with it? That if you set it up, for instance, such that it favored the direction of, let's say, London, and you talk to your buddy in London in the forward mode, you flip over to the reverse mode, the guy in London goes down 25 dB in signal strength, and now you start hearing a guy from Australia. And that would be kind of a fun QSO. N2 moon bounce. How soon are you going to be doing this? K2RIW.
Okay. Very good. You know, your explanation's great, and I'm having no trouble with this, so you've kind of answered my questions before I even asked them, which is really nice. I'm going to have fun with this. Just one minor thing. If we're coming together with two, like 50-ohm feed lines, that's going to be a 25-ohm feed point. Now, you say that these antennas should be approximately 75 ohms at their feed point. Is what you're thinking. Yes, Pussycat, I hear you there. Okay, buddy. You know, you put two 75-ohm lines together. That's not so bad. I'll have a slight SWR. I suppose I should be trying to bring it up to like 100 ohms where the two of them come together. We might go over that later. That can be done at any time. That's no big deal. I think I like the coiled-up coax thing. It's very predictable. It's also cheaper. So I'm probably going to do that. And I'm just waiting for the weather to get a little warmer, and I got to go out and buy the coax. It was my big decision which way I'm going with this, so until I figured that out, now I think I'm kind of ready to order some coax, so probably within a month or two, the whole project should be done. I've got all the wire, and I'm doing this really because I don't see much gain coming out of this thing. 2 dB a gain if I'm lucky, you know, it hardly matters. But the big winner in this is front-to-back ratio, and that means that I'll be able to eliminate lots of static, man-made static, atmospheric static, and everything else. So in the direction I'm trying to listen, I should get a real advantage because I'm going to be knocking that background noise down tremendously. And I think that is going to make it much easier for me to hear these elusive Australians and New Zealanders and Japan as well. I have heard them. But they're right at the noise level, and I think, not even knowing which direction the noise is coming from, I think just cutting the noise in half would work wonders. K2RIW and 2MB.
You brought up some very interesting other phenomena here, Barry, and that is you think you're only going to get 2 dB of gain. I think you might get more than 3 dB of gain. And while we're talking about gain, there are a couple of articles saying that when you have just the right spacing of a two-element Yagi, you can get, I think it's numbers like 4.5 dB of gain, Barry, when you got just the right spacing. And with a two-element Yagi where one of them is parasitic and one of them is driven, and the parasitic element, do you make it a director or a reflector? There are pros and cons of each. My gut feels it's opposite of common sense that you might get a little bit more gain out of a director. So that if the parasitic element was a director, I think approximately 4 to 4.5 dB of gain over isotropic, it might even be gain over dipole, but 4.5 dB of gain is possible with a two-element parasitic. Of course, the disadvantage of a parasitic is it's quite difficult to electronically reverse the direction of the antenna without doing something like the, what's the brand name of that antenna that, that's got the servo motor where you change the
left? Stepper.
That's the right, stepper R antenna. With the stepper technique, with a few seconds of grinding those motors, you can reverse the direction. When you're using an all-fed array, you can do the reversing of the direction a hell of a lot faster. Before you worry about putting a pair of 70 ohms in parallel, the next step of this investigation on paper is to model it, because the two antennas in your first example are a quarter wavelength apart. They don't have 73 ohms of impedance anymore. There is a section of the Antenna Engineering Handbook, and I think that section is duplicated in the ARRL antenna book. Let me drop. There is a section of these books which tell you mutual impedance. If you know whether or not the two antennas are broadside from each other or collinear from each other, and if you know the number of wavelengths of spacing between the antennas, there is a predictable impedance that each antenna will give. And it's going to be a significant amount of difference from, let's call it, 72 ohms resistive. So the fact that the two antennas see each other means the impedance is different and there's going to be a reactive component. And how much of that you correct by a simple capacitor across the feed length or something of the feed point of the two antennas, there's going to be some fairly simple correction technique that will bring it all together very nicely. So if you did nothing and just dumbly built it and had a 1.8 to 1 standing to wave ratio, it would fly like a charm. And a 1.8 to 1 standing to wave ratio, my gut feel as to what you're going to get if you do nothing. Just put them together with a T connector, so to speak, as far as impedance matching in the shack is concerned. That gives you 4/10 of a dB of potential loss if you were not readjusting your antenna tuner. With your antenna tuner, even that insertion loss of impedance mismatch completely goes away. So you could just dumbly build it and try it. But if you want to be a real scientist and or fix it later, there's ways of calculating what is the mutual impedance effects between these two antennas. I think there was another point I was going to make, but I think you've got the concept. And let's hope that the weather finally warms up. You get a chance to build this and find out what it's like. It should be a lot of fun. Anybody with any further questions or comments, and Barry might have some, speak up right now. K2LIW in the TechNet.
K2KEY.
Mel recognized. Anyone else? Mel, I wonder if you or your merry group of guys at the Kings County Radio Club have built anything like this. I'll bet you have. Tell me what they discovered and how they made it work better. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Back in my youth, I used the HAK system for 20 meters, my first 20-meter directional antenna. Basically, was built with bamboo pipe, bamboo poles, and using the HAK system with just taping wire, number 12 wire, to the bamboo. And basically, what it was half-wave elements with a spacing of somewhere between 1/8 and 1/4 wave. And now, the number of stations that are using them, similar ideas I've run into, like on 75 meters, with the modeling program and all, they show approximately, and they seem to all agree, somewhere a little over 3 dB gain, or as they call it, about 5.5 dB high. So, it's a viable antenna. Gets a little ungainly, of course, up around 75 meters. But if you have the room, I should say, the support, it works fairly well from what I did with it, I should say, on higher frequency years ago, Dick, over.
I ran to the other room to get the copy out of the copy machine with the handy talkie in my hand, so I heard everything that Mel said about getting the copies of this article that we're going to be discussing very soon on balance. Hopefully everyone has gone to that website that Bill has told us about, 2GZ, which is bitemark.com/products/tango-lima-tango-siri.htm. And we'll be discussing that real soon. So, in your youth, you built it. You liked it. And how long did you use that antenna? How many of the other guys that you talked to decided to duplicate your results? I'm Mel, K2KEY, K2LAW.
Back in the, you know, the 50s, it was fairly popular. The beams that were coming online at the time, some of them were a little pricey. In fact, everything was a little pricey for most of the hams at the time of my age. You know, they were mostly teenagers, a lot of teenage hams got into amateur radio at the time as novices and all, and with very moderate amounts of extra cash to send. So here comes along an antenna that literally could build for, as they say, close to nothing, which I really did. There was a lot of source of bamboo around that time because of for you on certain holiday. And so I had the bamboo, and as far as turning the antenna, well, no problem with a TV rotor, basically. So I had a lot of experience, in, you know, with it on 20 meters, worked out quite well. And I got a good run out of it. I'd say until it fell apart, it most likely was up there at least a little more than a year. Eventually the bamboo and everything, it deteriorated with time, Dick, being that it was really just literally, you know, sandwiched together, scrapped together very haphazardly over.
Okay, and 20 meters, I guess each half of the antenna was 32 feet long, if I understand correctly. Yes, I think each half was 32 feet long, each dipole, so to speak, with bamboo in between the two, depending on what kind of crisscrossing or whatever you did. The greatest stress that an antenna would experience is that ice loading on the dipoles themselves in the wintertime could easily unevenly load it so that the thing starts twisting. And out of curiosity, Mel, was that the mode of failure? And with the smarts you've got today, if you rebuilt it, I bet you could make it last for 10 years instead of 1 year. Is that approximately what happened, Mel? Go ahead.
Yeah, basically the failure was the bamboo. Just split, you know, it just deteriorated. I don't think it was icing so much. We don't get the heck of a lot of icing in the part of the world. And it wasn't up very high because I had no real way of raising it up much above the roof at the time. I had it with a vent pipe there, and a vent pipe mount. It was basically, like I say, a salvage TV pipe, salvage TV rotor, bamboo, that secondhand bamboo that I got that they threw out, and put together with you know, a piece of wire, and you name it. It was really a haphazard type of construction, of course, that I would never consider today. But, you know, I was only at that time when I built that thing, I was about, let's see, I completed, in fact, I remember when I built it, when I completed a kit, building a Johnson Viking 2, so that'd be about 1956. I was about 16 years old, Dick, and didn't have much experience, really, in, you know, in building a, you know, a well-designed structure, but it was in all the magazines, you know, it was a thing that was featured regularly in USC and all as a four-man beam, over.
Very fine. And Barry's got a tall enough tower that by putting a slanted guy wire, so to speak, from the top of the tower, there's a slim chance with some electronic shortening techniques by loading coils and top hat capacitors and whatever, you could potentially string this antenna as vertically polarized end-fire array, Barry. But horizontal, that's if you're doing it on 80 meters. And maybe you're going to do it on 40 meters. Putting this antenna together on your property, a two-element phased array on 160, would be a challenge. But I wouldn't put it past you. It could be done. But while we're on the subject, let me show you a very interesting concept. Right now, this antenna that Barry just described to us that he's probably going to build is called an end-fire antenna. Yagi-like structures are called end-fire. The signal comes out of one end of the antenna. The whole antenna, if you built a whole lot of elements this way, would be all parallel to the ground. Let's assume in my example, all your elements are going from east to west, and you've got a string of these going along the boom, and the boom is structured north-south. And the main lobe out of the antenna would be either north or south, depending on how you phase it all. That's called end-fire. If, by comparison, you took the exact same number of elements, let's assume now we've got four elements together, four elements on the boom, and I decide to take that boom and twist it, the northern end of the boom, I push it down, the southern end of the boom, I push it up, and I've now got a boom that is perpendicular to the ground, and I've now got a whole bunch of these half-wave dipoles, approximately quarter-wave spaced from each other, and they're now stacked vertically, one above the other. And if I fed that in phase, it would be a broadside collinear array. And the way I just described of tipping the northern end of the boom down and the southern end I pick up so that the whole boom is perpendicular to the ground, and I've now got all of these half-wave dipoles vertically stacked. They're all going from east to west. And if I fed them in phase, I'm simultaneously making a lobe to the north, and I'm simultaneously making a lobe to the south.
And you have no front-to-back ratio. That's the only problem.
You're absolutely right. But now I'm going to show you something interesting you can do with that. Let me drop. No front-to-back ratio, and no advantage that Barry is looking for of the noise in one direction being rejected and the signals you want to favor in the other direction being favored. However, the possibility exists that on some particular day, the ionosphere is behaving in such a way that the guy he wants to talk to requires a takeoff angle of, let me pick a number, 30 degrees above the horizon. And if he now didn't feed every one of those vertically stacked dipoles in a co-phase manner, if he fed the ones that are higher above the ground later and the ones that are closer to the ground earlier, he's now creating a beam steering, electronic beam steering, in elevation. That beam, by the way, has got a lot of directivity in elevation, and it's got a simple dipole pattern in azimuth. He could electronically steer the beam 30 degrees above the horizon because he knows enough about the ionospheric state, and the particular guy where he's going to talk to would have the strongest signal with a 30-degree takeoff angle. And by delaying the signals that are going to the dipoles that are higher above the ground, again, the beam, this antenna is generally a broadside array, but you can steer away from broadside by, again, delaying the signals to the direction you want to delay, to the direction you want to steer it. I want to steer the beam 30 degrees above the horizon in my example. By delaying the higher dipoles compared to the lower ones, I'm pulling that beam toward the delayed elements. That's the second application of this universal rule of thumb that the smart antennas use. The antenna fires more in the direction of the delay. So how do you electronically steer a phased array antenna? Now that you know which direction you want to pull the beam, the elements that are closer to that direction, the higher ones in this direction because I want to steer the beam above the horizon, are the ones I would delay. A lot of people have trouble picturing what's going on there. By that simple rule of thumb, it may help. Back to you, Barry, for some closing comments on this subject. It's a beauty. And I know you're not going to build that vertical stack, but I'm just using it as a method of showing how to do electronic steering. And you could take that whole vertical boom, rotate it to the top of the boom toward the east so that now the whole thing becomes a horizontal array of vertical dipoles, and by the same technique you could steer the beam to the left and to the right without mechanically rotating the beam. So electronic steering has a lot of stealth, a lot of capability. Not too many amateurs have used it. It's just a matter of learning the concepts. Once you learn them, they've got great electronic advantage.
Repeater, time out.
They got great electronic advantage, and I say go for it. Back to you, Barry, and to Moonbound, K2RIW. Wait for the beep.
WB2HWW, question on the subject?
How we recognize, but Barry first. Go ahead, Barry.
Okay. Why am I hearing myself? All right. Anyway, I think we've really covered it beautifully, and I'm not going to burden everybody with a mechanical way to take that whole thing you just explained, and instead of using this phasing method to change the angle, you might want to just mechanically turn the whole thing vertical instead of horizontal. There is a way to do that. I've got it on my drawing board, believe it or not, and that would also give you a lower angle. I find vertical polarization, which of course is a lower angle, tends to be very advantageous around here for Europe. And possibly for Australia. I'm starting to think now, long path to Australia, definitely is. Let me turn it over, let Howie pick it up, and I thank you so much for that, because it really cleared my head. I had all this figured out 2 years ago, but so many things... something's happened in the last 2 years, I, you know, just like fogged away. It's good that somebody has a brain here. Back to you, Dick, and you can turn it over to whoever is picking it up. And 2MB Rockaway.
Very fine, Barry. And by the way, you've got the audio readjusted just right. Good sounding audio. Nice signal. Howie, go right ahead with your question.
All right. This is on quarter-way phasing of antennas. Have they spoken in the past about two inverted Vs? I asked someone to a computer model. Two inverted Vs, one going north-south, one going east and west, one separated by, let's say, a quarter wave or a half wave in distance from each other on a rooftop, set in phase with 275 ohm peak of the cable. As you know, I was looking to get all directions and all polarities. It looks like when you do the modeling, there are going to be certain locations where you're going to have, like, very deep null. There's not a perfect sphere. What I'm asking, would I be better off having them in phase or having them out of phase by a quarter wavelength? The purpose of the quarter cables are to get the two inverted Vs to give me a 50 ohm. Remember, inverted V is a 50 ohm, so matching it with 75 ohm transmission line would work. So what I'm asking is this question, Dick. Let me reset the repeater. If I have two inverted Vs separated by some distance, so they don't interact with each other, and one's going north-south, one's going east-west, what is the difference if I put them in phase? What is the difference if I feed them out of phase? Now, number two, the modeling showed that the best way to get the best omnidirectional pattern is to have the two antennas as close as physically possible on the same boom, but not separating them by some distance, because then I get more interaction. Could you make comments on that, Dick?
I might just comment that Howie was saying he wanted both horizontal and vertical polarization, and I truly believe he's only going to get horizontal in the explanation he just gave us. Over to you, Dick.
There's a number of different ways of doing this one, Howie and Barry. Let's assume I've got an inverted V where the apex angle is close to 90 degrees. Each piece of wire is 45 degrees from the ground. So I've got one high support mast in the center. I got one inverted V where the wire goes from east to west. I got the other inverted V where the wires go from north to south. Those two antennas are at right angles to each other. They are orthogonal. They are thoroughly decoupled. When I look at each one of the individual dipoles broadside, I'm purely horizontal. When I look at each one of those inverted Vs endwise, one at a time, I'm looking at the end in plane, so to speak, I am vertically polarized. So horizontal broadside, vertical end view, but because they're at right angles to each other, they are decoupled. They're on the exact same mast. Let's zoom out. I've got a 100-foot high tower, and I've got the center of each one of them 100 feet above the ground, and they slope away at 45-degree angle to the ground. And once again, one is east-west, one is north-south. They are thoroughly decoupled. In that mode, I could feed the east-west and favor the north-south direction. I could favor the north. I could feed the north-south wire and favor the east-west direction. If I feed them both simultaneously, if I do it in phase or 180 degrees out of phase, I will slightly favor northeast-southwest in one combination or northwest-southeast in the other combination. But now, because they are thoroughly decoupled from each other, and if each one of them gave me, let me pick a number, 50 ohms. I think when you make a inverted V dipole, let me drop. If you make an inverted V dipole with just the right angle and just the right distance above the ground, just the right length, I believe you come close to 50 ohms of resistive impedance at the center. I might be wrong on that, but let's assume it's 50 ohms.
Ask him why he wants inverted Vs.
Well, there's a whole bunch of questions here. The nice thing about inverted V is that it only requires one simple support that's high, and the other support can be wires going down toward the ground, which become an egg insulator, which become another piece of rope, so to speak, going all the way to the ground. mechanically, it's got a lot going for it. You only need one single support. And by having two orthogonal antennas, east-west for one, north-south for the other, in theory, you have electronic means of covering all directions.